Shop Maniacs, you're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show podcast, all about front end views and development. I'm Dave Rupert, with me is Chris Coyer. Did you see what I did there, Chris?
It was good.
It was good, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Best.
And with us is Evan View. Oh, sorry, I mean Evan You. Hey, Evan, I'm sure nobody's ever done that before.
Actually, you're the first one.
Oh,
I'm surprised. Oh. I'm surprised.
I'll take it. Evan Yu is the creator of Vue, which is unbelievable and amazing. And we're lucky to have you. So thanks for coming on, Evan.
Thank you.
You know, can we just get right into maybe a little introduction about yourself and Vue? Because that seems like certainly your major project these days. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I primarily just work on Vue full time now. I've been actually doing it for 3 years now.
3 years. Sure it feels like an eternity. It does to me.
Actually, it actually feels pretty fast. Oh. Like when I look back, it's kind of surprising. It's already been 3 years.
Oh, wow.
Like feels like I haven't been working on it that long. I guess that's because I actually enjoyed working on it. So it's not like, you know, when you're working on a job you don't like, it feels like eternity, but this is not the case.
Yeah, you love it. Well, that's a good feeling to love the project that you're working on now. Now, I, you know, Vue is often mentioned in the same breath as, you know, I don't know if you like the word framework or not. Probably it doesn't bother you too much, but
it's fine.
Yeah. You know, I know React people are sometimes like, it's not a framework, you know, but whatever. It's mentioned in the same breath as, you know, people are like, in a JavaScript framework like React or Angular or Vue, you know, I don't know. Or some people put Vue, some people say React, Vue, Angular. I don't know. The order doesn't matter, but it's used for that same, I don't know. It's used if you're building a JavaScript powered app, you may choose a JavaScript powered framework to run that app. And React's a big dog, but I'd say Vue is, you know, dang near second place, if not second place these days, and growing. And what's unique to me about Vue is that literally everybody loves it. Like if you meet a Vue person, they're in love. No, have you found that not to be true?
Not really. I mean, I've had plenty of, a lot of diehard React fans, you know, they're like, oh, template strings, horrible, you know?
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, people who actually use it mostly love it, so that's good.
What is it? Can we just do that? Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of our audience probably knows, but it'd be nice to hear from the creator how you think of Vue. Like, what is it and what is its place in the world?
Sure. So today I actually call it as a framework proper because its scope has expanded from the original definition of just a Vue layer library. We've now expanded to include like a routing solution, a state management library, actual CLI with a build toolchain, and a lot of like DevTools extensions. So it now encompasses a wide range of things that work together as a framework. But we try to, you know, take a more progressive approach where we don't force you to use everything all at once. Instead, you can just pick the core if that's really what you just need. Mm-hmm. And then if you're building something more complex, you can opt into the additional stuff. So that's the high level idea of what the progressive framework is.
Do you think of it as component based too? Is it, you know, I guess I think of React in that way, is that like, what you are building is components that deal with each other in some way. Is that the kind of Vue?
Yeah, I think component is pretty much the common standard among all the most modern frameworks, right? If you look at Angular has components, Ember has components, Vue has components, and they all conceptually they work very similarly to one another. React probably is the one that's, you know, they have come up with a lot of interesting patterns of just using components for unconventional purposes. But at the core, you know, the conceptual model of these components among these frameworks share the same idea where a component renders something, it contains a bit of state, you know, and it can respond to user input.
I can see that being massively appealing to people choosing a library is that what you mentioned, that Vue has this routing solution and state management solution and all that. I always find that these frameworks, they need those things anyway, so that if you're left with React, it's your choice. I need to choose a routing solution, And maybe there's a clear winner. That's great if there is, but there often isn't. And then you're like, oh no, I'm forced with this extreme burden of having to choose one. What if I choose wrong? You know, will I shrivel up and die? But not, and then not just that choice, but also like, what's going to be my styling choice? What's going to be my state choice? What's going to be my offline choice in a way? And it seems like Vue has, you know, strongly chosen for you. Please use our thing. Or if you can only use our thing, I don't know.
This is actually Vue takes the middle route, right? If you look at, say, Angular or Ember, these are more convention over configuration where they pretty much say, please just use our thing. Like, we've designed everything for you, and this is the way you should do it. A Vue's approach is more like, so we have a blessed approach, and if you don't know what to use, you should just use it. But if you have strong opinions on what you really want to use, you can actually ditch the so-called official solution and just use something else you've built yourself. Or we don't. So the whole framework is structured in a way that these official solutions are not mandatory.
Oh, okay. It really is middle ground. Dave, you actually has a, you know, you've been using it lately, right?
Yeah, I've started a Nuxt project, which is, you know, kind of, I don't know. I'd be curious what your viewpoint on Nuxt is. But it seems like Vue with a few more rules, sort of, or conventions around it.
Is Nuxt blessed, as you put it, or not quite?
It's not really an official project, so it's not maintained by me or the core team directly. But is an important piece in our ecosystem because it gives you this out-of-the-box, higher-level framework that's more opinionated, but also solves more complex problems for you. So I would like to think of it as, you know, if you think about the framework as layers, Vue provides both these underlying pieces or building blocks and a loosely opinionated layer. So Nuxt is this higher level thing where it's more strongly opinionated, but it also, because of this strong opinion, it is able to provide a smoother experience. For example, when you're working with server-side rendering, server-side rendering is a particular thing that Nuxt is trying to solve. And if you're trying to manually set up a server-side rendering app with Vue, right, that's going to actually be pretty complex. There are a lot of things involved. You need to use Node.js, you need to use a web server, need to set up the build process properly. So Nuxt pretty much covers all of those for you. So if you use and install Nuxt, you're opting into all the conventions Nuxt enforces, but at the same time, you pretty much get a zero effort server-side rendering app working out of the box. So that's a trade-off, right? Like, if you want more control, you might want to dig into how to actually manually set up everything. But, you know, if you're happy with what Nuxt provides, it's definitely the easiest way to do server-side rendering with Vue.
Yeah, I come from kind of a Rails background. That's like, or even before that, like CakePHP used that as well. But like, I kind of like that MVC sort of like, hey, don't just make up folders. Like, these are actually what you should name your folders. I feel like Nuxt gives me that, you know. Vue, you know, I think you culturally probably have some like conventions, but you know, Nuxt sort of reinforces those. It sort of like says, like, this is actually where the folder where your components goes. It's called components, so use that one. So
yeah, and it's also part of the thing is because for our effort in Vue Core mostly focuses on there are different use cases for a framework. Some people just use it to enhance a primarily server rendered app, like a traditional server rendered app, like a Rails app or a PHP app, where they are just adding some interactivity to the front end. Some are actually building a single page application that talks to the back end, and some are building a full stack server rendered app. So Vue Core mostly focuses on the first two use cases, that is enhancing a legacy app or building a proper single page application. And Nuxt pretty much covers the full-stack server-side rendered app approach. And I think it's good to have them because the Nuxt team, they have their own team and they have a pretty active community as well. And you know, I think it's good to delegate that part of, you know, innovating in the server-side rendering area to the Nuxt team. And we actually communicate with very often. So if they have interesting ideas that would require supporting Vue Core, we would work together to find out what's the best way to do it.
I like what you said about the, like, one of your focuses, like, to kind of upgrade legacy apps. Because I work on a legacy Java application. And kind of like evaluating our options, like there's quite a bit of state. So we're just like, oh, we need something, right? Like we have to figure out something. And, you know, I was just like, well, I have a little bit of Vue experience. Let me just cut some prototypes here and see what we can do. And I like that Vue can kind of exist in an application. Like, you know, I think if I was writing like, and we'll get in, I kind of want to ask about these .vue file things, but you can write, you know, Vue components in JavaScript and then just load them anywhere you want onto the page. And it's really pretty easy, even just with like a script tag.
So you're talking about a zero build process kind of way, like Vue's like happy to support, process. Just load up the Vue library, write some JavaScript and you can use it.
Right. But like you look at other competitors, we'll call them, like Angular, pretty heavy build process, no matter, especially with like its TypeScript default. You know, you look at like React, React is pretty good, but you know, it's got JSX kind of in there. And so now you kind of need to handle that, you know, and I found Vue to be kind of the best candidate for something like upgrading this legacy Java app. I think ultimately we may end up rewriting all that in Angular. I don't know, but it was just kind of this one thing, that was sort of like, what's the team comfortable with? But like, I think like one thing is like, Vue just stood out to me. I was just like, I think this is the best pick, y'all. I don't know. I think we can just ship things now today. We could drop it in. So I like that aspect about it. And it was that kind of like, I guess, was that sort of a demand or was that your situation? Why did you guys focus on that? Why did y'all focus on that?
So this is really a overall philosophy of keeping the entry of barrier low as much as possible. This is important, not just for, you know, upgrading a legacy app, but also for beginners to get into the framework. The learning process, if you require someone to just like first install Node.js, set up a build process just to be able to, you know, build something and see something on the screen, I feel that's just putting too much things in between from getting zero to one. We want to make that process as painless as possible.
I think that's really cool. Because you probably hate these analogies, but often I hear Vue kind of like called like the jQuery of frameworks, right? Because like, it's just something you can sort of sprinkle in.
Yeah, that's an intentional decision, right? We want to keep it that way. We want to keep the options open. And overall, the point of being incrementally adaptable is a big strength of the framework, I believe, because you know you can use it in all these different situations by taking different amount out of the framework so that your knowledge applies to a wider range of scenarios.
That's nice. So you don't necessarily find it burdensome to have to support that. Like what would Vue look like if you're like, well, in order to use this, you have to run a build step?
Well, the only actual real constraint that we have is there are some edge cases where when you write HTML strings when you write a template directly in HTML, the browser like forces everything to lowercase. So that's being a pretty annoying restriction. But outside of that, I guess the other thing is we have to be aware of the bundle size of our compiler, because the compiler needs to run in the browser when people are trying to compile templates directly on the fly. So currently Vue 2's compiler size is around like 10 KB gzipped, which I think is pretty good. So when we are writing the compiler, we have to intentionally be aware of the final size of the bundle. So far, I think we've managed to keep it at a reasonable size.
That's an interesting thing about Views. When you talk about HTML template, you literally mean the template tag in HTML. It uses it, which is not a Vue feature, is just a standard feature, right?
You can also, so you can use the HTML template, which is the literal template tag, Alternatively, Vue also supports just taking anything you've written in HTML, a plain element, and it can just use that as the template source. So it'll just use outer HTML and compile it into JavaScript.
Or you could even write your like a template literal string in JavaScript, couldn't you?
Yep. Yeah, yep, you can do that.
There's so many ways. It's great.
Yeah, I find that to be kind of cool. You know, I do kind of different things for different purposes, but there's also this other thing, right? The Vue file. Can you talk about like what the heck a Vue file is?
So a dot Vue file, you know, a file that ends with the Vue extension is what we call a single file component. So this in this file, you can include a template tag, a script tag, a style tag, pretty much just like a normal HTML file. The difference is it's treated as when you import it from another JavaScript file, it's treated as a module. So this single module would contain the logic of your component, the template of your component, and the CSS styling of your component. So all of this is used as a source file. So we pipe it through a build process. For example, with Webpack, we have a loader called Vue Loader. So the Vue Loader will parse this file, extract the relevant parts, compile them as necessary, and finally reassemble everything together. So in this single file, you can actually also specify different preprocessors for each part. Say you can use Less or Sass for your style block. You can use Babel or TypeScript for your script block. You can even use Pug for your templates. Everything can be hooked up via Webpack and then finally compiled into plain JavaScript that you can use just like a normal Vue component.
Can you write HAML though? That's what the people want to know.
Yes, you can. As long as there's a Webpack loader for it, you can use it.
I wonder if there is. That's funny.
So I guess when you get into Vue files, you're in use a build step territory, right? With Webpack.
Yep. You have to. But there's something interesting going on because there is a spec called HTML modules that's currently being discussed under the Web Components umbrella. And the Edge team is actually starting to actually try to work on it now. So if that becomes a native feature of the platform, which looks so similar to Vue single file components, I think a plain Vue single file component can be changed to a native HTML module with just one line of code and with some support from Vue Core.
Awesome.
So that would be really interesting. Maybe in the future you can just write native single file components with Vue.
Whoa. Okay, can I ask a zinger here? Are you ready? So what's the story with Vue in like web components? Because, you know, on the surface, like a Vue file looks a lot like a Polymer element kind of or something like that. But I think in your docs you're even like, it looks a lot like a web component, but it's different or something. So what's the story there? And would you ever adopt web components or what's preventing you?
Right. So Vue came up with the single file components and we actually have some mechanism. For example, slots in Vue are modeled loosely after the shadow DOM slots mechanism. But when we first came up with single file components and the slots mechanism, web components were still like a bunch of specs that were not even finalized. And Google were pushing all these polyfills, but they're heavy. Some of them are not performant enough. So they require a lot of polyfills to actually work properly in older browsers. But if you're using Vue, you don't actually need any polyfills. The same code would work all the way down to IE9. So that's one of the reasons we were like, until Web Components is natively supported in all the browsers within Vue's support range, right? It just doesn't make much sense for us to go for Web Components by forcing all our users to have to include all these polyfills just as a baseline upfront cost, right? So that's one of the big blocker. And back then, it's also a very risky choice because, for example, HTML imports was part of the web component spec, but now it's completely abandoned because Firefox don't want to work on it. So today, custom elements and shadow DOM are pretty much stabilized. But if you think about, say, when you talk about using web components, right? The first question is, what exactly do you mean? So can you say I'm using web components if I'm using custom elements and shadow DOM? if I'm just building an app where all the components in this app are only used by myself, then what's the point of making them custom elements, right? The whole benefit of custom elements is that you can ship something. You can distribute a component to others that they can use without subscribing to a framework. That is nice. But if you're only building these components for your own use, then the value of custom elements is really, you know, I just don't see where the value really is.
Well, Shadow DOM would be valuable, right? Because you don't have to write any kind of fancy scoping stuff into your library.
Right. So Shadow DOM with scope styles is a nice thing, but it has problems with server-side rendering. Mm. So if we use Shadow DOM by default, there's still currently no declarative Shadow DOM, so which means your server render output would not include any of these styles up front. So you would have this flash of unstyled content.
I see, yeah.
Until your JavaScript kicks in, right? So for us, you know, if we can solve server-side rendering with scope Shadow DOM and scope CSS, then it would be very nice to just adopt it. But as from the framework's perspective, when we adopt something, we have to think about how universally applicable it is. There are plenty of users who use Vue with server-side rendering. So if our default solution doesn't work in server-side rendering, it creates a lot of friction and confusion for our users. So that's why we're still sticking to the compile-based scope CSS implementation so that it works consistently across all use cases.
Yeah, there's just not, you just don't see the value there when it's, you know, there's more problems than solutions, or in a way.
Yeah, it's always trade-offs, right? So for us, you know, all the drawbacks of potentially going full web components just outweighs the benefits it gives us. So for example, the benefit of shipping libraries as web components is actually a good one. So in our CLI, we have this functionality where you can build normal Vue components into wrapped as native custom elements. So you can build with --, target WC and it outputs a bundle which registers all these components as native custom elements. So the consumer of these components no longer need to use Vue to consume these components. They can just use them as real custom elements. So this is something, if we find there's real value in these new features, we'll definitely find a way to support them. But when people say like frameworks should just switch to use web components internally, I just often feel like it's sort of platform for platform's sake. And there are just a lot of trade-offs you usually don't notice unless you actually work on these frameworks.
I appreciate the explanation there, because it seems like it's easy to think, I don't know, wouldn't it be nice if just all the frameworks used the same platform kind of way? That way innovation could happen at like a different level, that like we don't have to disagree at the base component style, that we can, you know, work on different things.
But I feel like when you... there is another layer of it to it, right? So these specs like custom elements and the Shadow DOM, they don't really solve anything about how to efficiently re-render your DOM, right? How to compose your components, how the data flow works.
Yep, nothing. No state management. Yeah, nothing.
Exactly, right? So these are still pretty much the responsibility of these frameworks. Even Polymer, right? Polymer is built on top of it, but Polymer is a framework of its own. It has its own templating system, has its own like conventions and all that. So I don't see Polymer actually being that different from other frameworks, except for the fact that it's like built directly on top of these real custom elements. At the same time, right, like a framework like Vue, we can totally evolve to take advantage of native custom elements if that really, you know, becomes a worthwhile trade-off. It's not really that hard for us to actually do that. It's just...
you're already the closest ones there, I'd say, you know, with the native template support and the...
yeah, totally. So, I don't really see it as a this or that situation, but more like when is the right time and when is the right situation to actually use them together. Yeah.
It sounds like it's probably not Vue 3. Yeah.
Well, Vue 3... there's nothing inherently preventing us from using them per se. It's just like using them by default doesn't actually bring us any like benefits for the majority of use cases.
I mostly meant it as a segue to get you to talk about Vue 3, really.
Yeah, I mean, Vue 3 is, we're on the way. I have a pretty extensive post, but if you want, I can just go over some of the major things we're working on.
Sure.
Yeah, isn't kind of the highlight that it's like smaller and better? Is that smaller and faster?
Smaller and faster is obviously a goal, because whenever you do a big rewrite, you always want to take the opportunity to improve those objective metrics, right? Being smaller and faster is always a good thing. The other major thing is we are rewriting with TypeScript.
Oh, wow.
This is mostly for long-term maintenance purposes. So Vue 2 already uses Flow. We use Flow in the very early days of Vue 2. Over the time, you know, over 2 years, TypeScript has really improved in terms of IDE support, ecosystem, and the language stability itself. All of these are pretty much a clear win now. So we figure we'll just switch to TypeScript. And it also makes it easier for us to maintain our typings, because right now we have to actually write the source code in Flow and then maintain a separate set of TypeScript typings, which is a lot of overhead, to be honest.
It also doesn't matter to anybody else, right? Like, it's just an interesting little side note, or people might be interested to be like, oh, I see the Vue core team is having success with TypeScript, so maybe that might matter to my project. But it doesn't mean that your project needs to care about TypeScript.
Totally, yeah. This is a common FUD coming from some users who don't use TypeScript. They'll be like, oh, do I have to use TypeScript to use Vue 3? Obviously, the answer is no. The API will remain mostly the same if you don't want to use TypeScript. But if you do use TypeScript with Vue, rewriting in TypeScript also allows us to, it makes it easier for us to provide better TypeScript support. So that's another bonus, right? So we can give you a smoother TypeScript experience if you do use it. But if you don't use it, you don't have to worry about it.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by Jetpack. It's jetpack.com. It's a plugin for your self-hosted WordPress site that brings just this massive slew of features to your WordPress site. I use it on all my sites because how useful all those features are. Here's one of them. It kind of connects your self-hosted WordPress site with WordPress.com, the mega site, you know, that has a bunch of functionality all to itself, including like being able to be a CDN and leverage those kind of abilities. It just kind of automatically gives you power to access that if you want. Here's another one that I like, though, is because then you're on WordPress.com, then you can use the WordPress mobile app like on your phone and kind of manage your site that way, which is cool, which does all kinds of stuff. Like it can do automatic plugin updates for you, which is nice. I can sit there and like look at all the comments on my site and approve comments, which is just a job I have to do on CSS Tricks that I can now do through the WordPress.com app. And I do that all the time. And recently they've launched like an activity feature, which is kind of cool and not a feature of your self-hosted WordPress site. Just like this user did this. This user did this. This user logged in. This user changed their avatar. This user updated this blog post. Kind of like, you know, just proof of what people are doing on the site, which is nice for you to just check in and look. But if you're like, what happened to this? There's like a reference where you can go look and see what happened, which I just think is kind of nice. I think a lot of good web apps have that feature, that activity thing, so that you can check in on things. Pretty cool. Use Jetpack. Bye-bye. I wonder, do you have a sense of, to bring it back to that, you know, kind of the difference between using, you know, I don't know, like a CDN-hosted version of Vue and just sprinkling it into an app or whatever, or the kind of web-packed, you know, more all-in Vue file processed approach? I don't know if you have any metrics or anything, or have a sense of like how do people usually use Vue? Is it pretty sprinkled?
I think there are definitely a lot of use cases for both. Somewhat relevant metrics for the more build oriented approach, you can take a look at our NPM downloads. So that would be, we currently have like probably 3 million downloads per.
Fascinating. And if you do that, then it's in your build. It's not you're not just hosting a
compiled copy. And in comparison, our CDN hits on JS Deliver is 451 million per month.
But that's interesting because that's every page view-ish of...
Yeah, that definitely is. But it's still a huge amount, right? Yeah. We are around half of jQuery.
But if it's browser cache, it's not really every CDN page view, right? Because the browser might hold on to it. And I don't know, it's a tricky story there with that, I guess.
Yeah, so, but you know, being at half of jQuery in terms of CDN hits, I think is still,
incredible.
You know, shows that we have a huge amount of users actually are just using Vue that way.
Well, and I think that's cool that, like, you can just use it off of CDN. You don't have, you know, like you're saying, you can kind of enhance your way into it. I guess I still want to hear more about, like, Vue 3 features. Maybe we should keep going. Like, what else is in Vue 3? Why? This is maybe a question I want to ask. Why is it smaller and faster? I mean, you rewrote in TypeScript, but I don't have to use it. But like,
so right, one of the important things I forgot to mention for Vue 3 is we want to take advantage of some of the new native language features in ES 2015 and above. Currently in Vue. Our Vue 2 support range is down to IE9, which means we have to transpile down to ES5, and we cannot use features that cannot be polyfilled, which means we cannot use proxies. Proxies are really nice for implementing, you know, change detection. So Vue 3 is rewriting the whole data change observation system using proxies, but in doing that, we require a baseline support for native ES 2015. But a benefit of doing that is it also means we can output source code without having to transpile them. So we can just ship native ES 2015, and native ES 2015 minimizes better, right? A lot of these features, for example, a class or just a for of loop, all of these things, when you transpile it down to ES5, it becomes much, much more verbose and bloated. But if you ship native ES 2015, it results in better minified code. It also parses faster, runs faster.
Don't you think we're in the middle of a big wave of people doing this, of people being like, oh, taking a look at, well, okay, we can drop IE11 support. So what is our base? You know, all the rest of these browsers are so good at being evergreen. You're like, why am I even babbling anymore?
Totally. This is one of the reasons we actually have a feature called modem mode in our CLI, where you when you build with the modem flag, it outputs two different bundles for your app. One is transpiled with Babel. The other only transpiles the necessary features that are supported by... So we have a baseline that's all the browsers that natively support ES modules. It's a pretty good indicator. So Babel... Preset end has this feature built in. So essentially, you have a bundle that includes as much native ES 2015 as possible. So this bundle will be smaller, parsed faster, runs faster. And then we also generate the HTML file that automatically uses the correct bundle based on the browser it's loaded in.
How wonderfully convenient is that? That you can just go type equals module and get a version that loads up that can be all ES6 heavy and stuff. That's a convenient little trick that the browsers have given us.
Yeah. It's actually an interesting hack because it uses script type of module, type equals module, right? If the browser supports that, it definitely supports a lot of these ES 2015 features. But if it doesn't support it, we can then fall back to the normal imports.
Yeah, super nice. Okay, so Dave, are you happy with, are you gonna?
No, I think that's good. Like, so it's IE11 is, and that is not in your feature matrix, but you're saying this kind of like modern module system can kind of fall back to IE11, or?
So for IE11, Vue 3, the default build of Vue 3 will not support IE11. The baseline requirement is evergreen browsers with full ES 2015 support. But the system, so So we can actually swap the observer module, which has a hard reliance on proxies, to a legacy implementation, which maintains largely the same API, but with some of the limitations that's currently in 2.x. So that results in a sort of IE11 build that would work in IE11, but with the same limitations of the 2.x change detection. But if you don't have to support IE11, you'll be able to just use the more modern output. So the change system that leverages proxies gets rid of a bunch of things, a bunch of the caveats that's currently in Vue 2.x. So in Vue 2, we currently have some limitations on, for example, we cannot detect a newly added property. If you add a new property to a project, Vue cannot detect that, but with proxies, we can. And then for arrays, if you mutate the length, in ES5, it's also we're not able to detect that. But in Vue 3, all of these edge cases go away, which is really nice.
Interesting. I'm curious how it's going to work, like in practice, when people upgrade their systems. So, does it seem like it's passing tests, like for IE11 or something?
We haven't really started backporting all the tests yet. So Vue 3 is still in early stages, where we are pretty much trying to validate all the things we want to do. And I think in terms of re-implementing the system in proxies, that's already done. We're also, some of these size and performance improvements are also based on our current prototype, which is largely feature parity with 2.x, but there are still a lot of internal improvements that we can keep exploring.
Cool.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you by An Event Apart. It's literally aneventapart.com, which is a conference series, my favorite conference series, that goes all around the different cities around the United States all year long. So the 2019 season has kicked off, and you're missing Seattle. By the time you read this, it's very nearly over or over, and that's sad because I'm going to be at Seattle giving a talk that has its roots here on Chop Talk Show, and I'm very excited about it. But just because you miss Seattle doesn't mean you have to miss the rest of the year. There's lots of more events coming up in 2019, so check it out. They're coming to Boston, Washington, D.C., Chicago, Denver, San Francisco. Is one of those near you and you can make it, or do you wish to travel to one of those cities? I think it's about half and half how that works out usually at An Event Apart. They're just phenomenal conferences with phenomenal speakers, and it's just really comfortable and fun and professional and just packed full of big, wonderful ideas that make you think and make you better at your job. Please consider coming to an Event Apart, and I don't think you'll regret it, so check it out. You know, we got to talk with Henry from Babbel a few weeks ago, and he's in a unique spot. I feel like got some sense from him that he's got the world on his shoulders in a sense in some days, and that it's been hard in some ways but it sounds like he's kind of got the financials thing kind of figured out, and there's a team around him, but he's still kind of, you know, a big part of guiding the effort forward and stuff. I wonder if you feel any similarity there. You know, right in the bottom of Vue.js.org, it says copyright 2014 to 2019, Evan Yu. You know, it's in a way, it's just you. And I don't know what you could explain your team situation is, but it's, you know, it's even leveraged occasionally as a criticism, right? Like, why would I pick Vue? It's just one guy.
Well, technically, it's no longer just one guy. Right now, I'm more or less. Actually, a considerable chunk of my time is more like setting the higher-level vision for the project, writing RFCs, talking with team members on what they're working on. I still do the only repository on GitHub that I am actively looking at every day is Vue Core. The CLI, our dev tools, ESLint plugins, router, Vue.x, all of these are pretty much delegated out. And I tend to only periodically look at them in batch. So that my daily focus is on setting the vision for the entire project and working on the core. And then for all these satellite projects, other parts, supporting parts of the framework, the daily maintenance is largely delegated out. And I would periodically just like process the issues that emerges that really needs my attention. So I think that's good because our team members, although most of them are volunteers, are actually doing a pretty good job in just keeping things on track. In that sense, I definitely feel for Henry because I actually talk to him quite often. I think I'm partially responsible for pushing him to do it full time. when he was still working at Behance, he actually talked to me quite a few times. And he was like, I want to do this full time. And I was just trying to give some advice on how to figure out the finance. And I think like overall, it's really, there are multiple facets involved in working on open source full time, right? So if you're not able to be financially sustainable, that's definitely a very challenging place to be because you're dealing with pressure from both sides, both from your actual life, where like can you actually make a living out of the things you're working on? And the other side is all the responsibility on your shoulder. Like I have this project, people are using it, I need to keep working on it so that it, you know, people are happy. So working on full time is a huge commitment. Luckily for me, my financial situation is pretty stable. As I said, I've been working on this for 3 years now, and it's only been getting better financially. So I think I'm very, very lucky to have this sorted out so that I can actually focus on just working on the project and improving it.
I'm sure that's a complicated part of it right there, because you can't just be like, oh, what am I going to do? Well, I'll just throw up a Patreon and see how it goes. You know, you can't, because you can't, right? It needs to be, it sounds like you have that, but you also have other ways of accepting donations, whether they're recurring or not, and you have sponsorship involved too. And I'm sure the whole model is pretty complicated. And then it's not necessarily just like Evan Yu's bank account, right? There's costs involved here. There's, I'm sure, people that are paid for various reasons and things. So,
yeah, but believe it or not, for the most part, it was really just setting up a Patreon.
It was,
and oh. But I think okay, well, yeah, that's still the majority of it, actually. So, but the thing about Patreon is, Patreon really, if you think about Patreon, it's really just a payment processing thing, right? So, what matters more is how you actually set up your Patreon. Or how do you set up the incentives so that people or companies are willing to give you money on Patreon? Like, it doesn't really matter if it's Patreon or not. If there is another like payment processing service that allows you to just accept like recurring donations, they're pretty much the same thing, because Patreon as a platform is mostly for content creators. It's for like people who make videos or... Right. Like produce.
So for you, you stuff. Don't care. You're not promising anything from your Patreon. You're not delivering a recipe every month.
Yeah. If I'm a silver tier, what do I get here?
Yeah. So for us, Patreon really is more like the higher tier you go, the better exposure you get with your logo on our website. That's pretty much it. Right. And I think that's good because like I intentionally set up my Patreon to be as passive as possible. Like, I don't want to have to constantly do things to just entice people to keep the sponsorship or keep attract new users. I want to just make it so that once I set it up, I can keep focusing on working on the actual thing instead of worrying about attracting more people to donate.
Yeah.
This is, I feel like in some way, this may result in, you know, getting actually less than what you could get. But I think for me, that's the better outcome, because getting something completely off your table is really important. I actually spend a decent chunk of time automating the whole process of like when a new patron sponsor signs up, I automatically send them an email and ask them to fill out a form, which goes into a database, and then which auto triggers a pull request to our website to add their logo to it.
Nice. That's wonderful.
Yeah. So I just, you know, I want to get this off my plate as much as possible so I don't need to think about it, so I can actually focus on the code.
A true programmer.
Well, one thing I like is I feel like your sponsorship model has also like filtered out to other components, or like Nuxt, or, you know, even like Vue tabs or something like that. You know, like it's kind of a very pro sponsor community, you know, and I don't think I've ever seen that in any kind of open source niche, really, like that is just so welcoming of like sponsor banners and things like that. I think it's really sustainable, and I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I think one of the reason that our users are tolerant with that is because they know we're independent, right? So in order for the project to be sustainable, there's got to be some way for us to generate income to sustain, like, just sustain our living, sustain our time investment. Unlike Angular or Facebook, where, you know, they pretty much have their corporate backing. So it makes sense for people to not care about it for us, because they know, like, eventually seeing these, like, tolerating these banners is essentially supporting us.
So on that note, like, you're kind of the indie choice, or one of a few, in terms of, you don't have a Google, a Facebook, you know, a Microsoft, even, you know, if you look at GitHub as a whole, you don't have that kind of backing. And so what does that mean for your project? Does that make, like, do you have like big clients, you know, coming to you and saying like, oh, we'd love to be on Vue, but you're not owned by Facebook, so we're going to go with React? Or, you know, where does that put you in? Like, I guess, is that risky for big companies? Have you talked to companies about this, or what's that situation like?
Yeah, definitely. So this definitely has made us always be fighting the uphill battle. Like, we've heard people saying like, oh, it's going to die next year because it's not backed by a big company. We've been hearing that since day one. But we've been here for 5 years, and we're still here. The thing is, for a company, different kind of companies have different sort of risk tolerance in terms of a technology, right? Small, more flexible companies, they typically are more willing to try out these independent projects. At the same time, you know, there are people who are smart enough to know that corporate backing doesn't necessarily mean the project is guaranteed to be here for the long run. Like, think about how Angular 1 ended up.
Right.
Think about, like, not every like big company open source project is guaranteed to be maintained, especially when if you think about corporate backed open source projects. These projects exist because their primary purpose is still to serve the company that created it. So their interest may not perfectly align with just an external user who happened to have a use case for these libraries. In that sense, an independent project guarantees to always put their users first, right? Because we are not serving some for-profit product or we're not serving a purpose that may have misalignment with our users' goals. Our goal is to fulfill what our users want, right? So I think at the higher level, this is a big difference. And on the other side, the more practical side, when people think about, is it risky to adopt a project that's independent? I always try to convince people to not think about big company versus independent, but rather look at the track record of the projects. So if you look at how Vue has been doing over the last 5 years, look at the releases, all the work that went into it, all the issues we've closed, all the releases we've made, right? Just look at these numbers and data and judge for yourself. Do you think this project is here to stay? And I think most people will make reasonable judgments, right? If they actually look at the data. On the other hand, projects also have it takes time for a project to grow and mature. So that's why, like, maybe when Vue was just, when Vue just came out, it's totally valid for people to say, yes, it's risky, right? But how we made it today is by being consistent. So despite people saying that this project is going to die next year, we keep working on it year over year. So every year we become stronger. Every year we get more users, which means we get to attract more users in the future, because, you know, the more track record you build, the more reliable you become.
Well said. I think about that with CodePen. Like, we're around every year. We could become a little bit like, we're not going anywhere. We're in this thing, you know, like, you can trust us. We're a long time thing. And just because something's a big company doesn't make them automatically trust. I love looking at the Twitter type ahead library. That's a fun one to look at on GitHub, because it's by Twitter. How Twitter does open source. Amazing. How trustworthy, you know, and it's absolute abandonware, because I'm sure it was just some developer at Twitter put it together. I could probably just look, but there's no reason to. Who cares, you know? And then they leave, and then what does Twitter have to hire somebody to?
Totally. Yeah. I feel like the biggest risk for these big company open source projects is the original lead, or like the original people who worked on this project just leave the company. I feel like it's pretty much the project loses vision. The risk is almost the same as someone who started the project independently decides to stop working on it. And it's actually less likely, because, you know, people who actually start an independent project and work on it full time, that's a very, very strong sign of commitment. It's like starting a startup, right?
Yeah. So are there any kind of big brand name projects that use Vue, or is it just the Vue website?
GitLab would be probably one of the most...
Wow, that's a Vue project. I use that every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
You were using Vue the whole time.
Like, I actually like to tell that to people, because, like, a lot of these companies use GitLab internally and they're like, who uses Vue? I'm like, you probably are.
Oh, yeah. I use the heck out of GitLab. Well, look, can we do one for the learners out there? I know, you know, maybe we've lost them already if you're an absolute beginner here. Anyway,
but 15 minutes into this podcast. Yeah.
But maybe we'll have a hyperlink to get right here, though. But I bet, Evan, you have a pretty good idea of what clicks with people after all these years with Vue as a learner. Like, what could we point them towards? Maybe it's a resource, or maybe it's just an abstract concept of, like, what would you start with if you're trying to learn Vue?
Start with definitely just our documentation. I'm pretty proud of our documentation, because we hear a lot of good feedback around it. Chris, who's been primarily... So I started the initial documentation, and then Chris pretty much took over. Chris Fritz has worked on the documentation a lot. And then Sarah Drasner contributed to our cookbooks. So there's a lot of good stuff in our documentation. And if you're a beginner, like, the documentation is the resource to get started with. Once you're comfortable with that, there are a bunch of good resources. Some of them are paid, but websites like Vue Mastery and VueSchool.io both have decent amount of free content. And if you feel like they are more, you're more the video type guy, then you can try those instead.
Cool. And what, you know, like, I don't know what kind of project is that. I guess it doesn't matter in a way, but is there, you know, like, I feel like Hello World sometimes is not enough, and To-Do app is a little played out.
And there are plenty of those courses on, like, just guide you walking through a full how to build an actual Vue application. There's also, I believe there is a project called Real World Frameworks or something. So it has a real world app for every framework. So that could be used as a good reference.
Yeah, we talked about that last week, wasn't it? Because we had Rich Harris on from Svelte. Yeah. It was kind of like, you know, instead of doing compare to do's, it's some kind of real world application thing. I forget what it's called.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's more interesting than the to-do one. Okay, that's great.
And then is there anything, like, is there a project you would recommend Vue on? I think that's a kind of a zinger we've been asking. Like, is there... Do you see situations where, like, maybe you don't want to use Vue?
Definitely. I mean, this mostly has to do with what kind of team constraints you're working with. For example, you have a bunch of developers who are just strongly into TypeScript, Java, enterprise-y stuff. Then you're probably better off going with Angular, right? There's just a natural match there. Then if you have a team who are already pretty into React or whatever other framework, right? There's the cost of switching over to Vue is definitely not worth it because, you know, you have all these prior knowledge and investment into another framework. So sometimes I would hear people say like, should we switch to Vue? I'm like, if you don't have major problems with what you're working with, you should probably just, you know, think about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
But overall, like Vue as a framework, we intentionally designed it to be as flexible as possible. So like our goal is to be able to cater to as many use cases as possible. But most of the time I would, you know, I recommend people against it is when they have already strong investment in other solutions in place.
Yeah, I can see that strongly. You know, it's always funny when you get the Twitter recommendation for, I'm like, oh shoot, how do I do this in WordPress? They're like, well, you switch to Hugo. You're like, what, are you crazy?
Or ViewPress.
Yeah, ViewPress. Sorry. Yeah, ViewPress. Okay. Well, is there anything that you want to make sure that the 35 to 45 developers listening to this show really?
Well, thank you for listening this far.
Is there anything you want to, I don't know, say to the world about Vue or you or your project or let them know?
So we have VueConf US that's happening in March 25th. To 27th in Tampa, Florida.
Oh, in Tampa. Wasn't it in New Orleans last time?
Yes. This time we're doing it on the beach.
Tampa. So. I used to live in Tampa.
Nice.
On the beach.
By the time you hear this, if there are still tickets available, yeah, you should check it out. VueConf US.
March 27th through, or 25th through to 27th in Tampa at the Stratz Art Center in sunny Tampa, Florida. That's wonderful.
Tampa. Good choice. Well, thank you, Evan, so much for coming on to the show. We really appreciate it. And this has been awesome for me because I have been getting into Vue and like it quite a bit. So really appreciate that. For those who aren't following you and giving you money, how can they do that?
Giving me money. That's great. you can do it on Patreon or on our Open Collective as well. So Patreon is my personal income. Open Collective money, we actually keep it for the project, pretty much like a foundation, and we use it to reimburse work done by our core team members. So if, for example, if someone works on a project by just taking some weeks off and focusing on Vue, or they do a pretty big long-term undertaking, they can reimburse from our Open Collective. So that is a nice way to support more people spending more time on the framework. Also want to mention that quite a few of our core team members also have their own personal Patreons. Chris, Fritz, Eduardo, and Linus Borg, they have like Kofi. But, you know, go to our team's page, love them on their Twitter profile. They probably will mention how they personally would accept donations. And it'd be great for them to also get more donations because of the work they've been doing for Vue.
Oh, nailed it. I'm glad you caught that, right? It's kind of like forgetting to thank your wife at the Oscars or something, but you got it.
Well, awesome. Well, thank you very much. And thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your podcatcher choice. Be sure to star heart favorite it up. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show for tens of tweets a month. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one because people want to hire people like you. And Chris, do you have anything else you'd like to say?
Shoptalkshow.com.